Richard Alther is a painter and author of three previous novels, and now brings us Roxy and Fred, a love story in the vein of the 1971 movie Harold and Maude, well, not in its dark humor, but more in the disparate ages of the leading couple. Roxy is quite a bit older than Fred, and like Joan Frank's novel, Alther's book explores the depths of love and life available to us when we let go of convention. Here is our conversation. Richard Alther, thank you for joining us today remotely here in Sonoma County to talk about your latest novel, Roxy and Fred. On the surface, it is a book about two people who fall in love. It is a love story, but it's a lot more than that. These are two complex people, not young people, and they are at turning points in their lives, whether they know it or not. So what prompted you to approach this kind of story?
Well, I write fiction because it gives me the chance to spend a couple of years reading, doing research, filling notebooks about a subject or two which have seized my interest. I guess it's commonly agreed that earliest novels, certainly first novels, are heavily autobiographical. So at this, and I had three unpublished novels before these four, so that material, Suzanne, is really well in my past. The subjects that I focused on with Roxy and Fred were, first of all, the psychology of creativity. I wanted to get a really close-up look of what it's like to be at an easel for hours at a time, what's going on inside and outside in that process. I'm a painter. I've been painting all my life, since finger painting in kindergarten. I've never stopped. But writing is cerebral. Painting is from the guts. And I wanted to just find out more about what goes on here. It's almost occurred to me like, you know, when we kept dream journals, or when you ever tried to snatch remnants of a dream, it's sort of a snapshot of the subconscious. And I felt that way about the challenge of writing about painting. So that was one area. And the other area, Suzanne, was my interest in what is it like to be really old and to be approaching the end of life, but of sound body and mind in the process. I am not young, I'm not old, but I wanted to create a character who was really living until he or she died. I mean, really still feeling full of life, full of potential, in a quiet, appropriate way. My dad lived in 92, and I was told I had a great-grandfather who lived in 99. Everybody died early and alcoholic in their 50s and 60s on my mother's side. But I thought, you know, I have a chance of still living a very good long life, and I wanted to eavesdrop on that.
And as you mentioned, these are two characters. One is substantially older than the Roxy is older than Fred, and in you open the book with her chapter, and the structure of the book alternates. Sometimes a chapter on Roxy, sometimes a chapter on Fred, sometimes a chapter on Roxy and Fred. But you really do present a lot of their internal work and observations and state of mind, which allows us to almost immediately get into their groove. And it seems like she is at a place in her life of peacefulness, really. And he is a little bit younger, just turning 50, and really at a state of questioning things. And he is an artist, and they meet at an art class. But he has really maybe never come to terms with who he is as a person, whereas she has, in a way. So can you talk a little bit about their relationship and about the differences between Roxy and Fred and how they came together?
As you say, they're both artists, although she is doing many things at this point in her quiet, independent life, and that's how they meet. And their friendship eventually turns into a love affair. So it is a love story. But I wanted to focus just on these two characters in depth, and by doing so, create somewhat of their backstory. And the book opens with a close-up look at Roxy at present, and she seems quite content with her lot in life. She's well past marriages and affairs and children, and she's living very cloistered on her own. She's not a cougar, as one of my friends said. She has no interest in pursuing a male companion along those lines whatsoever. This friendship comes to her entirely out of the blue. And I wanted, in contrast to her, Fred, who's many years her junior, who's in turmoil and about to make a great leap in his life, having left his wife and divorcing her. Their children are almost, well, adults and on their own. And I wanted him to be almost a blank slate as to what could be possible for him, not just as a painter, but as a man, as a person in many ways. So the backstory that takes up much of the first third of the book shows where he is coming from, and especially for Roxy, the rich experiences she has had, both overseas and at home. Her whole background has been adventuresome and complicated, so that now when we meet her much later in life, it's by contrast to all that's gone before, and I feel we can identify with her composure. So she is composed, and Fred is the opposite. So therein lays, I think, the groundwork for the beginning of their connection.
She's comfortable with herself and the decisions she's made in her life, but everybody else might not be. She is a mother of two children herself, but she has, I'll say, abdicated her role as mother, and that was very much by her own choice, and has lived her life without relationship with her own children. And you give some of her backstory with her parents and background too, and I found that interesting to have a female main character who has left her family and children, and that it was not something necessarily that the reader is alienated by, or that seems like the reader might be left to judge that, but Roxy doesn't judge that.
Very good point. Thank you, Suzanne, because a few women readers have not liked Roxy, whom I feel are coming from a very conventional background as a choice of lifestyle for themselves. So Roxy has led an unorthodox path. She's been a countercultural for her day. But I don't see her as a free spirit, as a wild woman, as she was never a hippie. I made her father a Harvard educated cardiologist and surgeon from a very wealthy Boston background, where he had privilege and didn't really need to work, and yet he infused her with her, if not obligation, opportunity to help others. And this she does as a young woman. And yes, she does leave her own children and a very boring bourgeois marriage. She spends her adult years running Head Start programs and helping indigent mothers in the city and battered women and pregnant teens and so forth. So she does fulfill her need to be loving and helpful to others. It's sort of an alternate family or path she's chosen. But I do feel that her father gave her, as an only child, I made all this up, of course, I wanted her to feel emboldened as a young woman to chart her own course in an otherwise very male-centric culture, and without feeling guilty. And I don't think she's headstrong. In fact, she can be demure much of the time, and she doesn't question what she's done. And so at this point in her life that we meet her, she is content. And of course, that's a huge draw for Fred. And so the story soon evolves beyond their common interest in artwork.
And his background is perhaps more conventional, and he has always had artistic talent, and he's always had an interest in sex and had an early sexual awakening that maybe never really came together with him in marriage. He married out of maybe a conceptualization of what a good marriage would be like, and he has two children, and he even becomes a successful artist, and none of this really fulfills him. And I really got the impression that he was trapped in an identity that just wasn't him, and that it was his meeting of this woman who was, yes, older, but also unlike any woman he'd ever had a relationship with or knew, and that it really started opening him up in ways that maybe even scared him.
There's a little precursor to this in his backstory, in that he grew up as the dawn of feminism, and he realizes that his mother was basically a doormat and abused psychologically by his vitriolic dad. And so he comes to realize that he kind of married his mother, a young woman in college years who was not at his Ivy League school, who was in fact just a common town girl who worked on campus, and he felt safe in loving her and their starting a family. It didn't challenge him. And at this point in life when we meet him, he's had to realize that, really what you just said, Suzanne, that although she's been a loving and wonderful, supportive woman, she's never really challenged him. And he knows he has something in his guts, in the marrow of his bones that's knocking around, that needs expression. That his painting career, when we meet him, has been enormously successful, selling representational art, beautiful watercolors that everybody loves, and he has galleries coast to coast, and he earns their living, which is almost unheard of for an artist. But so he's been there, done that, and there's a part of Fred that is yearning, is questing, and this is how the spark happens when he meets a woman like Roxy, who has done so much of what he has done. He's had the privilege to do as a white male, if I may say, from his background, but never really gone after that brass ring.
Yes, and I'll say for the reader, some of his decisions come as a surprise in a way, or he was maybe just acting or passing for quite a long time, and then makes that impulsive decision that he has to change, and that change has to be a demonstrative one. And then he flounders a little bit with his art. And it was through meeting Roxy at an art class that really starts engaging him a little bit more. And she becomes his teacher of many things in getting in touch with himself. And he falls for her. He really falls for her. It takes her a little bit longer.
And I'm not sure, not to spoil the story,
right,
just because of her age and her huge background, she doesn't really fall as hard for him. I don't know if you're going to ask about it, Suzanne, but I have a feeling that I would appreciate your letting me say a word about sexuality and senior sexuality.
Sure. Yeah. No, I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't really focus on this, Suzanne, when I crafted my story. I was really what I told you earlier, wanting to see what is it like to get really old and enjoy every day and feel healthy, but yet knowing that there wasn't a lot more time. And I created a woman because I mentioned before, the thrill of me, for me as a novelist, is going into the unknown, uncharted territory. I mean, I'm at a point in my career where I don't want to write about what I know. I want to write about what I could imagine. And I had never created a female in my books, a secondary woman in my second novel. But I wanted to create a woman and sexuality across the table. And I thought initially, well, you know, she's that old. This isn't even on the shelf. Older people, certainly for a woman, this isn't what we talk about in polite society. And I have to say that Roxy taught me otherwise. I mean, she really led me through this story. And the feminist in me want to say, okay, we have Picasso, and he's had women, you know, a third or half his age or a quarter of his age, of silver foxes, silver daddies. Men have trophy wives. What about women and how they feel about their bodies? And is sexuality a thing long in the past, just living with happy memories or unhappy ones for that matter? And the more I researched and read everything I could find and talked to people, I felt, well, wait a minute. No. Sexual life does not have to be central. In fact, I think that even for most folks in the height of relationships, it's essential, but it's not really from morning to night. It's secondary. I mean, in the broad range of our relationships. And I thought, well, even for an older person, especially for a widow and a widower or a single person long past their prime, so to speak, they could still have physical feelings. It's not sexuality, sex. Needs for intimacy, cuddling, companionship, touching here and there. And again, as I say, the more I delved into it, Roxy just seemed to be absolutely open to that possibility without ever having it occur to her for years and years, and even well after she meets Fred. The story takes place over 2 years, and I don't think their intimacy begins much until the second year. I mean, they'll have spent a lot of time together by then. I have to add, I learned that there was a large need to talk about this. And I have to add, this is all after I wrote many drafts of the book. I was not really aiming for this at all. But since my book has been out in pre-publication and advanced copies, it's clearly touched a nerve ending here. That it is not uncommon for seniors to have a viable need for closeness.
There were elements of it, Richard, that I felt there was a sweetness to the unfolding of their sexual relationship. And I thought that it was something that maybe was unexpected for her, but as you say, she was very open to it. And that I think it also broadened Fred and his perspective on his own sexuality and mm-hmm. how to be intimate with a woman. And he has other sexual relationships that he talks about, and there's another one that he experiences kind of simultaneously to his,
right.
meeting of Roxy.
Pilates instructor.
Yes, the Pilates instructor. And it sounds like we might be giving a lot away, but believe me, we are not giving a lot away on this book, Roxy and Fred, largely because in the book, we really get to experience a lot of their internal perspectives on their own lives and on each other. And also, I just want to take a little sidebar here on the structure of the book, but also the writing of the book. I mean, you say that you have been a lifelong painter, and art is central to a lot of the book, and your own use of language in describing these situations and describing art and the creation of art is itself kind of stunning. And I wonder what your writing process is, and your delight with vocabulary and sentence structure.
Thank you. I've been writing ever since college. I was fortunate enough to be at a school where even the zoology exams were essays. So I learned early on that I had a facility for writing, and I loved putting words together. The issue was that I was an English major at a university that was very focused on avocations and engineering and pre-med and all that stuff. And I thought, what the heck am I going to do, you know, as a writer, as a wordsmith? But I did have a career initially in Madison Avenue writing advertising copy, but that didn't last long because it was a bunch of baloney, frankly. And fortunately, my then wife wanted to move to the country. She was a writer, and we wanted to raise a family with fresh air and so forth. So I never stopped writing, although you would call that, you know, professional commercial writing. I still think that it helped equip me when I plunged in my early 30s into my first attempts at novel writing. I've written two short stories, and I guess all told about seven novels. So I do really love becoming totally immersed in a subject and my story so that it overwhelms all else. And I've never stopped reading fiction because that's how I get my complicated, messed up ideas about the world and trying to sort things out. But I have spent roughly two years on each of my books writing, and that's the thrill. I say the process is the payoff because, Suzanne, I start at 10 in the morning, and all of a sudden it's 4, 5, 6 o'clock, and I realize I haven't come up for air. And it's a total loss of ego. You know, I feel like I'm a vessel, you know, through which this is flowing. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that a writer can belabor, like a poet, every word and rewrite constantly. I did 20 drafts of Roxy and Fred, not that I don't do that. I love the flow of prose, and I got early recognition for that over my basic storytelling. That is something I've had to struggle to learn, to create a compelling story out of these issues that I've been interested in. But the writing, the prose, I often wonder, is it just like our handwriting? How much control do we have over it? And I love to read beautiful prose, and I love to read mine when I think it's there. And I'm reading it in a dispassionate way that I'm as a reader, I'm neutral. I'm just taking it in.
I think even just what you just said about you have a joy in creating the prose, but also your assessment of pleasure is at the level of being the reader of the prose. And I found it, I have not read your other books, and I found with this one that the language and some of the sentences were resonant with what you were talking about and describing, and I felt you were painting with words, and it seemed very fitting for the subject material, and it's inspired me to go read your other books, and I hope our readers will feel that inspiration too.
Suzanne, I thought when I finished that I did write to the atmosphere of what I was trying to create for Roxy and her world into which Fred steps and gets totally seduced by, a physical world where life slows down and she's looking at the shifting clouds and the breeze and the birds. She feeds chipmunks by hand out of her lap on her porch. And, you know, she's slowed the world down in one aspect to us as an outsider. And to her, it's universal. And I personally have come from New York and have been happiest as a hayseed in the country. And I find that when I finished the book, I realized that the language and the prose does slow things down and helps to create the beauty and the balm of Roxy's environment. And frankly, if I may say, that's why earlier in my life, for much of my life, I sold hundreds and hundreds of paintings because I was told they were soothing and they were contemplative and quiet and they were impressionistic, and whether they were watercolors and or oils, they evolved into very serene compositions, even when they became abstract, not literal. That was years and years ago. So that the spirit of my novel is really very much echoes my life as a painter. And as a painter, I feel like I was a sponge for, you know, color and the natural environment. Even when I don't paint it literally, and I still do that traveling, I take my little blocks of watercolor. And I may be sitting in front of hibiscus or bougainvillea or a gorgeous sea, but I don't paint that. But I make up abstract compositions that are inspired in my gut and my soul. So I guess a lot of that same process occurred for me in writing this book. To leave the flack of the modern world, which Fred has been in and Roxy has been in, and move toward a more interior, a quieter, more aware, and satisfying perception of everything around them.
And your description of your own painting, in my mind, marks the difference between Roxy as an artist and Fred as an artist, and that was part of her gift to him, was to kind of crack open. And I think he very much desired that. I think he knew he had something more in him than painting what he had been painting for so long. And how they meet is in a live drawing class where he looks at everybody's, you know, sketches, very literal sketches, and then he looks at what she's drawn, and it's kind of just a quick line drawing of the man's penis. And I think that stuck with him, of how she could capture something critical and easily. And I think that that's when they were working together, painting together, that was what she was, I think, helping open up in him.
Yeah.
Richard Alther, the book is Roxy and Fred. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you so much, Suzanne, for the opportunity.
Richard Alther and I talking about his latest work of fiction, Roxy and Fred. Earlier in the show, we heard from Joan Frank on her novel, All the News I Need. Both of these books are funny and sexy and real and are filled with characters that reveal hope and resiliency and the ever-present potential for reinvention and connection. You can listen to an unabridged version of this episode with Joan Frank reading from her book, and you can hear an expanded conversation I had with Richard Alther. Go online to krcb.org and listen to the expanded podcast. Many, many past shows are available there, and you can also subscribe to our podcasts and hear all of our upcoming shows as well. While you're at the website, consider contributing to the station and supporting public radio. We've had production assistance from Anthony Garcia, Sean Knight, and Mark Prell. I'm Suzanne Lang. Thanks for listening. It's a novel idea.